Good morning, man. Good morning, WLOB, 1310 a.m. listening audience. This is Steve-O, Time Smart Talk with Steve-O. How are we doing today there, Sully?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
Never been happier.
Excellent.
It is, what do we got here, Saturday, June 6th? You know, a couple days ago, it was 44 degrees or something like that here in beautiful Falmouth. In the first week of June, to have a day where it's like 12 degrees above freezing. I wish Deb was here when we were recording this. Because you know we love those talks about climate change.
We do.
Somehow she is either blissfully unaware or she is in the bubble, as we like to say. But those are always great discussions. Boy, what a show today. We've got, in just a few minutes, many people here in Maine are familiar with Dan Foley. He was on the most recent season of Survivor. I think he made it to the top six before he was voted off. We talked to him a few months ago while the show was still airing, and he wasn't allowed to really talk about a lot of the details of the show while it was still it was taped in advance, so we're looking forward to catching up with him and getting kind of the inside scoop. And what do we have leading into that? We have on this day, June 6th, you know, as we talked about before, what a weak day relative to birthdays.
Yeah, not great.
Yeah, you would think that there are hundreds and hundreds of well-known people and celebrities and famous athletes and politicians. And with 365 days, you would think that each day should have, I don't know, 5 or 10, like, really good on-this-day people. But on this day, June 6th, 1947, Robert Englund, the guy who did Freddy Krueger, like, how does he make on this day? And then Paul Giamatti, an actor, kind of a character actor.
Yeah.
Born in 52. How does he make on this day? And as I mentioned before, Paul Giamatti is probably equally famous because his dad was Bart Giamatti, who at one point was commissioner of baseball during a pretty big transition in the sport. What do we got here on this day, June 6th? Hey, before we bring in Dan Foley, what other big news do we have here in Maine? What do you get, Sully? Anything?
Oh, the that concealed weapon bill we talked about last week. Apparently, yeah. There was a they tried to pass an amendment sort of to it, not an amendment in the regular sense, but to have some sort of required safety training that was also shot down. Can't say I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah, that seemed then. Our governor wanted to change it. Originally, the bill said it would apply to people 21 and over, and he came back and said that wasn't fair for people in the military.
Correct.
And then they amended that. And for those who follow politics, I think people are aware that our state legislature is up there in Augusta right now trying to figure out the budget, which technically expires later this month. And I don't know what the actual mechanism is relative to either extending the current budget so the state's bills get paid or what's the actual mechanism for a shutdown. But it feels like we may be heading that way.
Not great.
No, it's not. It's not great. We're it feels like our state government spends more time in energy kind of fighting among itself than it does solving the problems we have. And for the state legislature and for our governor to continue to fight about tax reform and policy instead of really coming down and making hard decisions just seems, I don't know, it's kind of depressing.
Seems like they need to get Peter Mills back up there.
Oh, you're a fan.
Peter Mills?
Yeah, Peter Mills was here a couple of weeks ago. He is currently the executive director of the Maine Turnpike Authority. I would take, and I've said this before about the Mills family, I would take any of the Mills. Mm-hmm. I would take Peter, his sister Janet, who's currently Attorney General, Dora, who she's at UNE now, I believe, and she used to be the head health officer here in Maine. Yeah, and I'm sure there's other siblings. I would stipulate that I would support any Mills, and even if it's not their family, it just seems like it's a name with people who are committed to public service. So if your last name is Mills and you're driving around and you're listening right now, I would support you. I think we just need people with common sense and some critical thinking and some relevant experience.
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to ask Dan today when we get him on the phone in a few minutes?
I got to know all the behind the camera stuff.
You think he's going to give that up? Because you're a personal friend. You and Dan are, as we say in the business, friends. Because you, how have you met him again? How do you know?
He was my landlord a few years ago.
Yeah, like a good landlord, right? Because there's some landlords in Portland right now that have been involved with some real tragic things in terms of buildings and the apartment unit that burnt down and just awful things. But your landlord was one of the good landlords.
He is.
Okay.
Very trustworthy.
Trustworthy and, you know, didn't like double your rent and didn't like shut off your heat.
He did not. Very responsible.
Okay. And a couple other questions before we get to the Dan Foley interview.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk to him about, you know, Survivor is kind of a television phenom. It's been on for, I don't know how many years.
10 years, 15 years,
something like that. There's always two seasons. Other than Survivor, what's currently on TV that you tune into?
Oh, boy. Well, it's summertime now. All the shows are starting to end, but
yeah,
I don't know. I will admit outright that I am a Grey's Anatomy fan till the end, which may or may not be at the end.
Well, McDreamy is gone, right?
He is. Very tragic.
Yeah. Kind of a weird accident out of left field, right?
Yeah.
So that you have to be upset about that.
I am and I'm not. I am the type of person who can't help but spoil things ahead of time for myself. So, you know, it was kind of rumored that he was not planning on sticking around for another season. So it wasn't a surprise that they killed him off, I guess, but the timing of it was a little peculiar.
What do you like other reality shows? You ever watch Big Brother?
I don't.
Really?
No.
What about, I don't know, like Kardashians or Housewives of New York, New Jersey?
I can't.
You just can't do it?
Just can't do it.
Why?
These people are just completely opening their lives up to the public just for a dollar without working for it, without seemingly working for it.
Yeah. But we live in a culture and a society where there's almost an insatiable appetite for the public to know about other people. And it used to be celebrities. Like people would just want to read about celebrities and read People magazine and see what's going on behind the scenes with all the actors and actresses and, you know, every TV show. But now, over the last 10 or 15 years of reality shows, I think the public has increased that appetite to know details about not only celebrities, that'll always be there, but now it doesn't matter anybody. It could be a housewife. You could be a person who makes wedding cakes. You could be a carpenter or a do-it-yourself handy. People just want to know information of other people, and it's sort of voyeuristic, and I think it's definitely exploitive. Sometimes it's self-exploitive, but I think there's something in it in terms of the psychology of people wanting inside stuff, and much of it not good, but just want to know the secrets and kind of the inside stuff of other people, don't you think?
I do, and I think a lot of it started with, and this is a celebrity thing too, with how the other half lives. And that's definitely the housewives thing, is they're the other half, but they're not necessarily famous. But then it kind of trickles down into everybody else. How does the rest of the world live? And that's where we get the hoarders.
You may not remember. You ever hear the show Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous? That may be before your time.
I've heard of it.
You're in your 20s, and this is kind of an older thing, but there was this show that was on 20, 30 years ago, and there was this guy with his English accent. What was his name? I'll think of it. Robin Leach. And he would go, lifestyles of the rich and famous. And he would, like, go visit some old actor's house and see the mansion and the car and the yacht. And it was kind of the same thing. But now people want to just hear about how neighbors are living.
Or right.
And with social media, it's gone from being an entertainment platform driven mostly by television to each of us now, or most people in at least in kind of developed countries, can pick up their phone, their PDA, their iPhone, their whatever it is, Galaxy they have, and through Facebook and through Twitter and through Instagram and other than Snapchat, you have access to so many people's information. And it's kind of a generational thing, but people your age and, you know, my kids' age, I've got two of my youngest are teenagers and our oldest daughter is 24. They think nothing about putting their stuff out there, their information, where they're going, who they're with, who they're hanging with. And it's kind of weird.
It's a little creepy. I catch myself doing it now and then because it's a social norm now. But at the same time, I try to keep as much of that private as I can. I don't want to get caught in that sort of loop.
Are you on Facebook and Twitter?
I am.
How often do you update? What kind of information do you put on your Facebook and Twitter?
Not a lot of original posts, a lot of sharing of information.
Yeah. I mean, I'm on Twitter, and yeah, I'm on Twitter really because for me it's a pretty effective news feed, depending on who you follow.
Mm-hmm.
The information is kind of fast and furious. You know, I may get 100 tweets a minute coming from news sources and depending on what's going on and what news is happening. So for me, it's a fairly efficient and quick delivery method for getting news and information and weather stuff.
I was on my news feed on my Twitter before we started the show.
Yeah, because if anything happens, if any breaking news happens, 30 different people probably you follow and I follow are all tweeting. And so you find out within a nanosecond. But it just seems like, particularly with young people, meaning teenagers and young adults, they're growing up in a generation where there's, I don't want to say there's no shame, but there's no modesty relative to personal information. And there are kids right now that are growing up where all they know is sharing everything about their life, whether
right.
it's photos or videos or who they're friends with or what they're doing during the day.
Younger people don't understand the reach of the internet. Like, they understand that everybody's connected,
yeah.
but they don't understand the reach. I mean, I am old enough that I did not actually grow up with the internet.
Sure.
So I do understand the reach of the internet as it gets further and further out into the world, but kids now, they don't understand that.
Yeah, and to me, it's more than the salacious part of the internet. It's more than, you know, obviously there are issues with kids and adults and national politicians who post and connect with information and content that most people would find objectionable. You know, you hear about politicians sending pictures of themselves inappropriately to people. And so people kind of point to that and go, oh, that's the egregious part. And it clearly is. But I think it's also really, in many cases, both harmful and kind of detrimental when even people just posting innocuous information, where they're going, what time mm-hmm. they went to sleep, all this. And there's so much information out there that I think it creates a sensation that people almost want to, not outdo, but want to kind of keep up. Because mm-hmm. if you turn on your Twitter or your Facebook, people are sharing so much that you want to feel part of it. You know, ultimately, people just want to be connected to other people. So, you know, you read all this stuff. And then people, and the problem also is when we live in the digital world, as we do now, it is, everything's indelible. Everything is permanent. Everything is, you know, it's not like 50 years ago where you would say something or write something and it would kind of fade away. If you say something or write something now and it's digitized, from that point forward, it's always going to be out there.
I don't think anyone understands how permanent the internet can be.
Yeah, it's beyond permanent. Mm-hmm. It's eternal. You know, once it's digitized, you know. Well, anyhow, we could talk about this forever. But I think I think our guest Dan Foley is ready, is he?
I believe he is.
Okay, we are going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Dan Foley from Portland, Maine on the show. You're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, News Talk WLOB, 1310 a.m.
Stay tuned for more of Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O on News Talk WLOB.
When the leading antihistamine and Nasacort go nose-to-nose, Nasacort wins, stopping more of the chemical responses that can cause your nasal allergy symptoms. And when you stop more causes, you get 24-hour relief from sneezing, an itchy runny nose, even congestion. It's prescription-strength medicine available over-the-counter. Nasacort Allergy 24-hour. Stops more of what makes you miserable. Use as directed.
My Bad Back loves my Craftmatic.
My Bad Back loves my Craftmatic bed.
My Bad Back loves my Craftmatic adjustable bed.
These aren't actors. They're real people who sleep better every night thanks to their Craftmatic adjustable bed. Just call 800-371-9576. That's 800-371-9576. For prices and free information on today's Craftmatic adjustable beds, call 800-371-9576. That's 800-371-9576.
Hi, this is Carfax. You already say, show me the Carfax. But now you can say, show me millions of used cars for sale at the all-new Carfax.com, where now you can search with the power of Carfax. Want cars with no accidents reported? You got them. Used cars that are well-maintained? You can find those too. Even one-owner cars are just a click away. Plus, we're the only site where you get a free Carfax report with every car for sale. So, find the cars you want, avoid the ones you don't. Start your used car search at Carfax.com.
Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a fateful trip that started from this tropic point aboard this tiny ship. The mate was a mighty sailor man, skipper brave and sure. Five passengers set sail that day for a three-hour tour, a three-hour tour.
Wow. You're too young to know this, Sully, but one of the greatest shows ever, Gilligan's Island. And I don't know why we selected it, but it is the theme music we picked out for our guest today, Dan Foley. How are you doing, Dan?
What do you say, Steve? How are you doing, brother?
I've never been happier. As many people in Maine know, you were one of the standout participants in this latest season of Survivor. You made it almost to the end, so we want to talk about that. Very exciting, the way you represented Maine. But before we talk about that, why don't we kind of catch people up to date on what's going on with you? We talked to you a couple of months ago. Many people may not be aware, but Dan works in Portland, has spent a lot of time here. Actually, Gorham, is that right? You still live in Gorham, right?
Yeah, I've born and raised in Maine my whole life. Still a technician at the U.S. Postal Service. Still work during the days as an electrician. Still own a couple of apartment buildings. Nothing's really changed, and whether I won the game or not, I didn't expect it to change.
Right. And you're calling in now from where? It sounds like you're a little further away than Portland.
I am just a little further away. I drove down to Norman, Oklahoma. There is a training facility for the U.S. Postal Service, and I'm down here for a three-week school for one of the particular machines at the plant. And so I'm down here now in Oklahoma exile, but I made a lot of friends, you know, from all the trips that I've made down here, teachers, other students, just people that live in the area.
Right. And, I don't hear about a lot of people driving to Oklahoma. Was that something like, is there still an explorer in you that you like the experience of driving through a bunch of states, or was it something where the post office says, hey, Dan, we're skimping on money here. We need you to jump in the car and and do the long way there.
No, it's you know, when you're down here for a three-week school, if you don't have any transportation, you're stuck in the hotel. It's like being a hostage.
Right.
And I don't really want to do that. So, I mean, they'll fly me down here, or they'll pay for my driving expenses to come down. And I just assume have my car with me.
Yeah.
So next weekend, I'm actually driving to Texas, or this coming weekend, I'm driving to Austin to go visit a buddy of mine and former Survivor contestant, Greg Tarzan Smith.
What?
So I'm going to hang out with them for the weekend, and then the weekend after that, I'm going to spend the weekend with Mike Holloway, the winner of my season.
Right. Why don't we kind of bring people up to speed on this last season? When we spoke to you a few months ago, we kind of covered your background, which was you tried for many, many years to get on Survivor. You were tenacious. You went to tryouts. You went to auditions. You sent in tapes. Everyone knew how much you really wanted to be on the show. And we talked about how they contacted you and said, okay, this is it. And it's known as the 30th, is it 30th season in 15 years? Is that it? You were on
season. That's correct.
And down in Nicaragua, right?
We were down in Nicaragua, Survivor. It was in San Juan del Sur.
Mm-hmm.
And, for 15 years and 30 seasons, it was an epic season, to say the least.
Oh, I watched not every episode, but I watched a bunch. So why don't you set up this season, the last few years, they've gotten into these kind of thematic series or thematic seasons. This one was white collar versus blue collar versus no collar. So
right.
Tell our listeners a little bit the experience once you got there, and did you know you were going to be part of the blue collar team, and what was the experience like right from the start? And we'll talk about how the season kind of unfolded.
Well, the whole thing starts with what's called pregame. And you're there for about a week, and you're not supposed to talk to anybody, not even the other contestants, because they don't want people making pregame alignments or anything. And you end up just waiting for press day to happen. And then the day of the show finally starts, and you genuinely have no idea what the theme of the show is, what the concept is, anything else, but you do know how many people are there. And when there's 18 people, well, that's divisible by three. So I thought there was a good chance this was going to be a three-tribe season.
Wow.
And once they got us out there, we all rode in on trucks together, and obviously you can tell who's on your tribe. Everybody's got matching buffs.
Right.
So you have a pretty good idea of what's going on at that point. And, We got off the trucks and got onto the mats, and that first day, you're standing in front of Jeff Probst, and there's 100 people behind the cameras that you guys can't see, and it's the word I keep using is just surreal.
Right. Well, let's start with a certain point where it got contentious between you and I a couple of months ago, where Sully almost had to break it up in here, where I was like anyone interviewing any of the contestants on Survivor while the season is running. Everyone tries to be the interviewer that gets the interviewee to kind of break with some details or what's going to happen or how long did. Because at the point when I met you, it wasn't clear to anyone who won. You could have been the winner. And so, when I interviewed, I tried to ask you, well, what was it like? Or what are you going to do with all that money? And you're like, Steve-O, I told you I can't give you any details about production till the final show airs. So in this discussion, what limits are there still on either talking about production, because I want to ask the right questions, and I want to get, and beforehand when I talked to Sully, she goes, I want to understand the production side of it, like the backstage stuff. How much, are there any limits to what you can talk about here, or are you and I going to go at it again?
Okay, well, for the record,
okay.
I wasn't back on my haunches going, Steve, I can't say anything. I believe what I did was I deflected, and I told you, hey, how about those Patriots?
Absolutely.
That was my standard answer.
And I'm kidding, of course. We had a great conversation. It didn't get that contentious, and I think Survivor skills, you could have taken me down.
You were courteous, you were respectful, you were sneaky and devious, but you got nothing.
Fantastic.
But at this point, the only thing that I am not allowed to talk about is money. Hmm. And that's a question that a lot of people have asked. They're like, oh, surely you must get something. And I said, of course I do, and don't call me Shirley. But everybody everybody gets a little something. The longer you last in the game, the more you get.
Right.
Obviously, it isn't anything close to what the winner gets, but they want people to believe you either get $1 million or you get nothing.
Right.
But that isn't true.
Yeah, and I think without, again, I'm not going to try to be tricky with you now on the money thing, because you're too clever for me. I accept that, Dan Fuller. But there's even TV union rules on production and produced shows where people who are featured need to get paid something. There needs to be. So I think most people probably have the understanding that, yeah, if you're on it one episode and you get voted off, you probably get X. But if you go out to 20 episodes or 15, you get some multiple the further you stay in the game.
Well, you'd be surprised how many people actually don't know that.
Right.
A lot of people have genuinely come to me and said, do you get something? You know, they genuinely don't know. And what I was paid from the show is different than what I was paid for the live finale. And you actually mentioned, you know, the rules and the union rules and whatnot. One of the things that they were pretty adamant about was that nobody was a member of SAG. They did a very thorough background on that. And the name Dan Foley comes up in SAG a lot.
Wow.
And it's not me. But they want to make sure that nobody is a part of SAG so they do not have to pay the union rate.
Yeah, all it would have taken is one contestant kind of slipping through, and then all of a sudden that kind of breaches the union thing.
Yeah, absolutely. It throws a big monkey wrench into things, but I believe that's part of the reason why you'll never see Survivor America, because it's not filmed here, so they can get around a lot of the rules.
Wow. Well, let's... Talk a little bit about, you know, I think most people or most listeners have seen some years of Survivor, if not the most recent one, and people understand the general theme where a group of people are taken, they're isolated in some faraway place, and as we talked about, yours was Nicaragua, and you're right in that people only see the perspective from the front of the lens, and so much is going on behind the lens. Talk about a little, you know, this is for Sully. This was her question here. She wanted to know the nitty gritty on, like, you know, where is the production staff live in these air conditioned RV units, dining on filet mignon while you guys are eating like snail heads or something. So what does the production setup look like, and do you ever interact with that, and how much contact is there between all the audio people and all the videographers and all the producers?
So the first thing is that when you're in camp, okay, the game started with three teams of six, so there's six of us. There was a minimum of nine people behind the cameras that you never saw. So there's two camera crews, and each camera crew is three people.
Right.
A camera guy, an audio guy, and a minion. And the minions carry around the bags and extra batteries and extra discs. So there's two of them, so that's six people, plus two producers and one handler. And you are being watched 24/7. You are being filmed 24/7. And at no point did anybody from production eat in front of us.
Oh, they wow. That has to be a hard rule. Like if somebody was eating a Snickers bar and you were starving.
Never. Nothing. They never ate in front of us. They did have Camelbacks.
Right.
So they had these bags on them, and you would see them drink their water. But if they had the straw, you know, and they would just kind of sip out of it. But that was it. And it was nice because the town of San Juan del Sur, there were amenities. There were hotels, there were restaurants, not many, but there were some. And it was maybe 30 minutes away from where our camps were. So they would have trade-offs between different crews. And we would have crew A for a while, but crew B was on a break or they were elsewhere, you know, getting like stock footage, some of the filler stuff, you know, some nature shots, scenery, sunrise, sunset, all that kind of stuff. But then they would rotate, and they would, you know, then we'd get camera crew B in, And camera crew A would take a day off. They'd get good sleep, showers, good food, but we never saw any of it.
Was there any, whether, you know, they, is it almost just like they weren't allowed to eat? They probably would have to talk and communicate among themselves relative to moving into position and getting, you know, kind of getting the right camera. But was there any communication between any of the crew or the handlers and the contestants during the Survivor show?
Yeah, absolutely.
So what did that look like in terms of, because it looks like on TV that it's just Jeff Probst, that the only human being in the world that you guys talk to is either yourselves or Jeff, and other than that, you're just among yourselves.
Well, and that's the way they want it to look, other than when there are confessionals. Because you'll see, like, a person just sitting there all by themselves, and they're just kind of talking.
Right.
Well, again, there's the camera crew, camera, sound, and minion, and a producer who's asking you questions. And a lot of these questions are very directed. They're very pointed. They guide you in a very specific way. And some people picked up on them, some people didn't pick up on them. And it was, you know, we were not supposed to talk directly to anybody on the production side of things. Because if you do, you potentially screw up a scene, you screw up a shot.
Right.
So they don't want us to. But it was also pretty obvious who the crew liked and who they didn't like. And, I mean, all modesty aside, a lot of the crew made it very clear. They would come and they would mess around with me and they would, you know, they would say things and, you know, kind of like my comment about Rodney's mom. They would make derogatory comments because, you know, that's what guys do. We make fun of each other.
Right.
And me, Mike, we were definitely two of the favorites, you know, from the crew. They would mess with us quite a bit, and it was a lot of fun, especially when I would go catch fish. We would go check the net. And most of the camera crew, oddly enough, were from South Africa. It's just, you know, there's not that there's anything to it. It's just, I'm just stating an observation.
Yeah, it seems like after shows like Survivor, and even specifically Survivor, that many cast members come back and suggest that production plays a role on how you're portrayed. Are you evil, Dan? Are you happy? Are you sympathetic, Dan? Or, you know, and because if you're only showing a dimension of a question or context, you can kind of make anyone seem like the really nice person. Who was that guy, Rupert? Rupert, when he was on years ago, he was like the lovable Rupert. And because they showed things that really conveyed the sense that, oh boy, Rupert is very sympathetic, because at the end of the day, the show is about TV ratings. It's about selling advertising, making money, and being entertaining. So how much of that do you think from living the experience, being a contestant on Survivor, and then watching the shows, how close did the actual shows come to being like accurate portrayals of what you saw, or what percent is it, well, they made it this way to make it more entertaining?
I don't think it's any big secret that I've been very vocal about the fact that I was very unhappy about how I was treated. They made me look like a jerk. They made me look like a very bad person. And think about it from the perspective of being able to manipulate time. Because we filmed the entire show, day one to day 39. They know the events of day 39. And because of that, they will or will not show things that took place on day 1, day 5, day 7, day 12. And they will show how things will unfold based upon what they know will come. And I've been really clear that CBS did me dirty. They really did me badly. And I've gotten a lot, and I mean a lot of hate over this.
Wow.
I've gotten death threats. I've gotten just some really, I mean, one person sent me a message over social media, told me what a weak, pathetic, feeble-minded moron my wife must be to be married to a pig like me.
Wow. I wasn't aware of all that, Dan.
Oh, yeah. I've gotten some overwhelming hate. And I sent this person a message back, and I was, let me make this clear to you. You ever speak another word about my wife again, and as God is my witness, I will find you.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, if I say something stupid and I, you know, and you dislike me or somebody dislikes me because of it, that's fine. I can live with that. Those are my mistakes and I can live with that. But if you run around telling people that I'm a bad person and Sully hates me because of it, I got a real problem with that.
Well, for the record, Dan, Sully's a big fan.
I want to defend my own character.
Right, right.
And they portrayed me very, perfect example. I had an apartment available about a month ago, and I put an ad up on Craigslist, and this divorced mother showed up, very nice lady, showed up with her 3-year-old daughter and 7-year-old son, maybe, and they came in, and we're walking around the apartment, and I'm talking, and the little 3-year-old girl stands in front of me and puts her arms up in front of me, like she wants me to pick her up. So, I look at the mom, and I say, is that all right? She went, yeah. And she could see she was a little surprised. So I picked the little girl up, and I'm holding her, and I'm kind of making sure I put a little bounce in my step. We walk through the apartment, and I'm chit-chatting with the mom a little bit, trying to find out about her. And she just stops, and she goes, do you mind if I say something? And I said, no, what? She was a little bit more graphic than this, but I'll keep it clean. She goes, you're not a jerk at all. And I said, thank you.
What?
And she said, and I said, obviously you've watched Survivor. And she goes, actually, I don't. But I told a friend of mine that I was coming to look at your apartment. And she goes, oh, don't rent from him. He hates women. He's a bad person. And that's quite the perspective of a large group of people based upon how they portrayed me.
Well, as I said earlier, for the record, Sully here is a fan, right, Sully?
Absolutely.
In this case, of you. Come
well,
on.
Both
the show.
I know. By the way, we have Dan Foley on the phone. He is calling in from Oklahoma. And Dan was on the recent year of Survivor 30. Because you made it to the voting group, you stayed through the whole end. So how many weeks or how many days in all from when you landed in Nicaragua to when they flew you out, you were there?
From when I landed, I flew from Maine to Miami on July 28th, spent the night in Miami, flew to Managua on the 29th. The game actually started on August 4th, and I was voted out on day 35. And the game actually ended on August 12th.
Wow.
I made it to, what does that mean? I made it to August 7th on the show. No, excuse me, September 7th. Excuse me. It ended on September 12th. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I watched the episode where you were voted off, and I was trying to explain this to Sully, and for some reason she had a big appointment that night, and she wasn't able to make it, but she's going to go back and watch it. You had, like, the special power thing, right, during your tribal council.
I won an advantage in the game at the auction.
Right, which was give for two votes.
It's a vote doubler.
Yep.
So for one night, for one tribal council, I get a second vote.
And so you, in all the clips showing that tribal council, you were feeling pretty good about your doubler. But what you didn't know is one of the other gals,
Carolyn,
had the immunity idol. And so everyone kind of set it up that you thought everyone was voting for her. But then she used the immunity idol. So you kind of walked into a buzzsaw when you got to your tribal council, right?
Yeah. One of the many things that they didn't show was Sierra, one of the members from my blue collar tribe, who had walked up to me and said, hey, Dan, Will actually asked me if tonight's the night to get rid of you. And I said, really? And Mike, Carolyn, and Will had all gone on a reward together. And there's no getting around it. Mike deserved to win. I mean, other than me, of course.
Of course.
But Mike deserved to win the game. He really made some big moves. He made some dumb moves, in my opinion. But I think he did make some great moves, and he was able to get to the end of the game, and I felt like he deserved to win. And he has a very silver tongue. At one point in the game, they did show me calling him Teflon Mike because nothing bad sticks to him. Mm. And Sierra told me this, so I was a little concerned. And, you know, because I know how to do basic math, I didn't want to use my vote doubler when there was an even number of people, when there was an odd number of people, because that would potentially make an even number of votes, and that won't do me any good. I wanted to use it when there was an even number of people to hopefully make an odd number of votes and put those votes in my favor. So when Will said that he was talking about getting rid of me to Sierra, I thought, okay, it's going to be Will, Carolyn, and Mike versus me, Rodney, and Sierra. And also they didn't show at Tribal Council that night. Will came right out and said, he goes, listen, if Dan has an advantage in this game, he better use it tonight.
Yeah. How long do those tribal councils last? Because the way they're produced on Survivor, and I think it's like 5 or 10 minutes at the end of the show, it looks like you guys all march in, and if there's already a jury, a few of the jury people sit down, you put your flame there, you sit down, Jeff says a few things. But is it over that quickly, or is it like
no.
2 hours with production, and do they take it in little segments from voting, and then do they say production break? Because, you know, the tension, how do you keep the tension up over that period? So how long does like that part of the show usually last?
They usually show Tribal Council is lasting approximately 8 minutes on the show, but the average Tribal Council, I'd say it was usually about an hour and a half. And I think the longest one that we had was probably a good 2 hours and 15 minutes. I mean, it's kind of hard to tell because you have no sense of time out there.
Yeah. You went through like 6 or 7, right? How many, because of the way that the different tribes were set up, how many tribal councils did you attend altogether?
Let's see. The first one I attended was Lindsay's Kick. The next one I attended was Joaquin's Kick. And then we merged.
Right.
So then there was Kelly, Haley, Joe, Jen, Shireen, and Tyler. So that's 8 tribal councils where I was in the game.
Right.
And then
jury, you were.
And then 3 tribal councils where I was on the jury.
Out of all the tribal councils, you know, because part of the way the editing of Survivor is, before you go into tribal council, they show all these conversations that sometimes they're intentionally misleading the viewer to
Correct.
Think everyone's going to vote for this person, when in fact, looking back, since you sat through both the before the tribal council and those tribal councils, when you went to each tribal council, how accurate were you in your head how you thought the vote was going to go? And then how many times were you just so surprised that you just thought, how could that have happened?
That's a great question, actually. I knew the Lindsay vote. I was spot on with that one. That went exactly the way we planned. I knew the Joaquin vote. It went exactly the way we planned. Kelly was a surprise because Jen pulled out the idol, which we were not expecting. But Mike screwed that tribal council up. He completely screwed that up. The Joe vote went just the way we expected. The Jen vote went just the way we expected. The Shireen vote went a little bit awry, but still the way we expected. The Tyler vote went exactly the way we expected. And I knew something was brewing for me. So when Carolyn whipped out her idol, I did not get a hashtag blindside. Because as soon as she whipped out her idol, I already picked up my rucksack and had it on my shoulder.
Got it.
So I knew I was done. And again, I had the majority of the people with me. I had the majority of the votes were with me. But there were 5 votes against Carolyn and only 2 votes against me, and I still ended up going home.
Hmm.
So,
by the way, we've got Dan Foley, former contestant on most recent Survivor. You're listening to News Talk, WLOB, 1310 AM, Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O. Answer something for me. You know, when I talked to you about a month ago, a couple of your fellow castmates came to Portland and attended a couple of your viewing events here in Portland. You just mentioned you're in Oklahoma. You're going to see Mike or somebody else in Texas. when you go through an experience like this, in your case, there were a total of 18 castmates, and whether you win or not, or how, I guess it depends a little bit on how far you go in the game, it's an intensely emotional experience. It's like Outward Bound times 20 times the other side of the world times something else. What are the human, aside from the game, so the game is the game, but what are the human relationships like, and both during the game and then during the break between when the game finishes and you have to wait a few months for it to air, and then now it's aired, and is it like you've gone through something profound that only you guys know? Do you keep in touch like that? Or is it, well, Mike won and I'm friends with a few people and we stay in touch? Or how does the emotion of the game carry over that we don't see on camera? And then how does it carry over after the show airs?
One of the things that I was really criticized for was the fact that I just looked like such a sore sport, such a sourpuss over being voted out. And it's, you know, and I'm telling you right now, how can you not be pissed when you feel like somebody took $1 million out of your pocket? How can you not be upset? Because if you're not upset, you weren't there to win.
Right.
You were just happy being on TV. But now the game's over. And, you know, it was tough to take at first. I'm not going to lie. It really was. You know, I played with a lot of passion. And the game of Survivor is really not much different than life. And the way and this is just my humble opinion, but the way I see it, you will meet three types of people in the course of your life. The first kind of person is the person that as soon as you meet them, you know instantly, this is going to be a friend. There's something about this person that we just click. It's really nice just to be together with them. Number two, people that you meet and you think, I can take him or leave him. If I see him again, great. If I don't see him again, that's fine too. No big deal. The third kind of person is the person you're like, oh, God, we're like oil and water. Get away from me kind of thing. And you know that you're just never going to get along with this person. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not saying you wish ill on the person or they wish it on you. It's just you just don't get along. And Survivor's exactly the same. Some of the people I am really tight with, and I'll be friends with these people forever. Some of the people, I might happen to bump into them from time to time if I find myself in the area where they live or whatever. Other people, I could care less whether I ever saw them again or not.
Well.
So it's really no different. I mean, I still talk to Mike, Tyler, Sierra, Will, Rodney, Nina, Max. I talk to them all the time. You know, they call me up. We're still hanging out. And it's nice. You know, it's really nice. I know it sounds cliche, but some of the people, not just on Survivor, but I've met at casting halls, I've met in my journey to get on Survivor, it's worth a hell of a lot more to me than $1 million.
I agree. We've got Dan Foley. And in the last couple of minutes we have, Dan, I got a couple of questions I definitely want to get to. One, what were the accommodations like after you were voted off? This is a Sully question because, you know, she's pictured that, you know, you get voted off, you know, your flame gets put out, you go around the corner and there's a Winnebago and there's a milkshake machine and there's great food.
No,
and then a masseuse is there.
We go to a place called Ponderosa.
Really?
And yeah, that's just the nickname that they've called it. And in 30 seasons, they said our Ponderosa was the best out of anybody's. It was literally like a drug lord's compound. It was on the side of a hill overlooking the Pacific. There were three very distinctive tiers, three separate gazebos, an infinity pool. There were like these hotel rooms, five hotel rooms connected down below. So there were big bedrooms with gigantic, huge bathrooms. And all you can eat, all you can drink. The liquor never stopped flowing. They had, we would ask for, or not me, but Joe and some of the girls, they would ask for the yoga instructor to show up. Tyler and I were weightlifting on, you know, outside, and it was just gorgeous. It was absolutely stunning.
So you hated being voted off, but after a month, you know, living on berries and stuff, it had to be like a huge relief in terms of just, you know, physical comfort, right?
In a certain way, it was. And everybody goes there, but pre-jury and post-jury are intentionally kept separate. So they knew that Kelly was the last member before the jury was formed. So when Kelly got voted out, the very next day, they flew all of those people to Costa Rica, and they took them on just a kick-ass vacation.
Mm-hmm.
They went scuba diving and zip lining and surfing, and they went out to dinner every night, and it was, you know, they treated them to a five-star vacation. So they may not have gotten a lot of money, but they certainly got a, you know, a spectacular vacation out of it.
Cool. Final question for Dan Foley, recent contestant on CBS show Survivor. What now? I mean, you mentioned that, you know, you were unhappy with CBS in the edit. I don't know if that extends to Mark Burnett production, but many cast members and many contestants on Survivor, there's all kinds of superstar shows or best of and all that. Are there any plans, or do you have any interest yourself to be on one of those follow-up shows on Survivor? Or has this satiated your interest, your, you know, decade long interest in being on the show?
I don't watch a lot of TV. I mean, more so because I don't have a lot of time. I like my job. I like my coworkers. I like my life. But if something came along to make my world a better place, would I poo-poo it? Of course not. I wouldn't even know how to go about it. People have been telling me my entire life that I've got a great voice for radio, that I would have a great, like, speaking roles and whatnot, and I would certainly like to get into something like that, and I've got a few feelers out there to look for it. I'm not holding my breath, but then again, like I said, I'm certainly not going to discriminate against anything that would come my way. But
there's a chair here at Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O with your name on it, Dan. When you get back, when you make you're coming back the long way. You're taking the Oklahoma through Texas back to Maine, very lightly traveled path to get back to Maine. But when you get back, we'd love to have you come back in the studio. And certainly next season of Survivor launches, we'd love to have you come back and get your thoughts on how those guys are doing compared to your season.
Well, I've got a couple of my castmates that are on this season that's filming right now. And we'll definitely have to give my opinions if you're certainly willing to have me.
Of course. And aside from your feelings and how things were portrayed, I thought that both interviews I've seen with you or have read, I thought that you presented yourself very, very well. And I thought that you represented Maine and Portland and Gorham well. And I was sad to see you get voted off, but it's great to have you back in Maine, and look forward to talking to you again sometime soon.
Well, thank you, Steve. I really appreciate the time.
You bet. Enjoy the rest of your week at Oklahoma, and safe travels back.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate that.
Thank you. That's Dan Foley. He was on Survivor, and you're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O on WLOB 1310 AM. Thank you for listening. We will be back next week.